Just down the street from Frisco Fried in the Bayview neighborhood of San Francisco, I'm Schmitty with Talkin' Schmidt. Today, I link up with longtime skateboarder Elias Bingham. Elias lived in a three-story house filled with skaters for years in San Francisco and was sponsored by Element. He then moved to Austin, Texas and opened up the skate shop No Comply. The shop has continued to grow and is now one of the top shops in the country. Oh, and side note, Elias's great-grandfather was Hiram Bingham.
He was a professor of Latin American studies at Yale, and he was led a lot of expeditions down into Peru, which ended up to him discovering Machu Picchu.
Also, before we start the show, I just want to give you guys a heads up. It's official. I'm going to be interviewed by the executive director for the 50th episode. Email all your questions to talkinschmidt@gmail.com, and she'll pick out the best ones. Anyway, thanks for all the support, everybody. And now here's episode 33.
This is Elias Bingham, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
Just give it the old college try, right?
Oh, big dog's in.
Schmitty! What do you think, Schmitty?
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
We on? Schmitty?
Talking Schmidt.
He's so fucking bitchin'.
The cherry popper.
Shit my pants,
lad. Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yeah!
What's up, everybody? I'm back again with another episode from Texas. I'm still here in Austin, and I'm out at one of my favorite skate shops, No Comply, with Elias Bingham.
Hello, everybody.
What is good?
Oh, just chilling. Nice to have you out.
Yeah, dude, nice to be here. I love this city. I was telling Cheryl that I've been to Portland more times than here, but I love Austin a lot. It's always good to get out here when it's not South by.
Yeah, I recommend that's it's good to come so you can actually on another time so you can experience the whole town.
Yeah, we hit the Salt Lake last night. We got the barbecue in, we got Barton Springs, and we got a couple visits to your shop, so those were all high nice. On the bucket list, so done.
Sounds like you did it right.
Yeah. We were just talking, where were you born and raised?
I grew up in upstate New York till I was about 8, and then I was, my mom's from South Africa, so I went out there for a little bit.
Johannesburg?
No, she grew up in Zululand.
Oh.
So, yeah, she grew up, she speaks fluent Zulu and Afrikaans. And
no way.
So that was a trip, because seeing her talking with her childhood friends and this and clicking away.
Right.
It's a pretty bizarre language. It's pretty awesome sounding. So it's really neat to see.
How long were you there?
Just maybe about 4 months or so, but at 8 years old, that was pretty significant. Me and my twin brother Simon came back with full South African accents at the time. Fully picked it up. And so yeah, that was an epic time for sure. Then we moved to New Hampshire. We were there till about second grade till eighth grade, and then North Carolina through high school. So I started skateboarding in New Hampshire and then really got into it in North Carolina and really met a lot of people that I'm still friends with and through skateboarding from that period. And
was that Raleigh or Wilmington?
In Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill. Yeah. Oh, okay. That's where the university is, right?
Yep. Yeah, that whole Raleigh-Durham triangle area, it's pretty tight-knit, as well as everyone else in North Carolina, the skate scene was pretty tight.
And then what brought you to SF?
Me and Sinclair went on a road trip to California at the end of 95, and it was going to be a three-month road trip. I ended up staying till the end of 2006.
No way.
Yeah, there wasn't planned. I just ended up in San Francisco. And
Sinclair dropped you off?
Yeah, he bailed out early. He wanted to go home early, and I was excited about staying out for a few months, so I just stayed. And then Bob Reynolds was living there, and his neighbor said they'd rent me their couch, these two girls, and I rented their couch and ended
up. Where was that? What street?
On Divisadero and
Western Addition?
Yeah, Western Addition. It was like Golden Gate and Divisadero, I think.
Ah, sick. Yeah. And then you eventually made it to the Van Ness house.
Yeah, we had a few houses in between. We ended up, my other buddy, Mike Fortney, moved out there, and him and our friend Todd Cutter, who had moved there as well. We Mike had looked up houses to rent, and we ended up getting a house on York Street, York and 24th, which was...
Oh, right by Pops.
Right by Pops, but yeah, at that time, it was, it was the main blood street in the city.
Yeah.
We didn't know, we just looked up a house, it was cheap. The daytime looked nice, and then when we told any of the locals where we moved, they thought we were crazy, and we learned why later.
Yeah. Like, did you have some gnarly experiences?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of drive-bys. There was, you know, just every weekend, at least one night every weekend, there was crazy gunfights where sometimes I was literally scared to sit up in bed because I'd hear bullets ricocheting.
No way.
And then we did kind of get jumped by about 30 gang members one night. That was a pretty crazy event.
Whoa.
Probably was some kind of initiation for one of the gang kids.
Yeah.
We were going to play pool downtown, catching a bus on the 9 bus on Potrero right there. And we basically went to the store, got some beers, and we're waiting for the bus. And there's four of us. Little kid with a puffy jacket, handing his jacket, comes up to us, and he's like, "You empty your pockets.
Break yourself."
Yeah, we're just, there's four of us. We weren't even, like, we're just like, whatever, just ignored him. Then we see about 10 more kids coming up behind him. Well, not kids, but bigger dudes coming up behind him. And a car pulls up. The guys jump out of the car, and we're like kind of trying to figure out what to do, what's going on. We ran across the street, and about 30 other dudes come out from the shadows across the street.
Fuck.
We're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And our friend looked back, and our friend's surrounded by all the other guys. And they're all just swinging on him. So we get chased. We're just running as fast as we can. But
Hey, 24th Street was no joke.
We were running down Potrero towards the hospital. So I was dragging my heels, so I couldn't run as fast as I normally can. But I was, because my shoes were too loose.
Yeah.
I made it about a block and a half, and this giant thug dude football tackled me. I'd made it to the sidewalk, so he slammed me into the fence there, so I didn't go all the way down. I was halfway up.
Yeah.
He slammed me really hard, broke my fingers, and
fuck.
It was pretty crazy, because I'd seen all the gunfights and know that everyone was like, they're killing each other out there, so I knew they didn't. I was like, why would they care about us? I was like, the rest of the guys are catching up, and then I had a 22 bottle of beer in my hand that I hadn't opened yet.
Damn.
So I just clonked the guy over the head. Not like he just dropped, kicked off my shoes, and ran in my socks. And ran in zigzags, because I was convinced after hitting them that I was just 100% in my mind that they were going to start shooting at me. I can feel these guys behind me, and I didn't want to get tackled again. So since I hit them over the head, I was ready to... I was like, I have to turn around and stab these guys with this broken bottle. Never thought I could ever stab anyone in my life, or I thought that was something that I was not capable of doing, but at that time, that's what I had to do, and I was like ready to do it, and I just almost did it, almost turned around and did it, but I got away. I made it away,
fuck,
ran away, and then when I got away and I look at the bottle, it didn't even break. So I would have been just like poking him with a full bottle.
Have you been to the city lately and seen what 24 is like now?
Yeah, I mean, even while I was still living there, it had turned into what it has had started turning into what it is
yeah.
now. And Pops is there, but back then, there's no way Pops would have been there. No, I mean, there's no way that would have been okay.
When Pops was open and we first started going there, there was a couple nights where they locked the door, put us all to the back of the bar, and was like, dude, just be like, it was sketchy.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Now they got families walking down 2-4 getting coffee. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, no, I know. But for me, yeah, that was like, that whole corner was like the YSM, York Street mob, 24th Street mob.
Yeah.
Before that night, we weren't intimidated by them, really, because we obviously weren't in a gang, and they didn't care about it. Like, they were just more worried about other gangs. And
okay.
After that, it was a little kind of planned when we went out at night,
right,
which way we'd go.
Yeah.
Basically, the kid had to get a wallet. Like, the kid had pulled out a gun.
Yep.
And they're like, just give us your wallet. And he gave the wallet, and they left.
And then how did you get into the Van Ness house?
The Van Ness house was with Meredith and Vic and there's a whole North Carolina crew and Cairo in the beginning. Pete Thompson was on the second floor. Basically, that house had burnt down.
Did you know Cairo already?
Yeah, Cairo had lived out at that, actually the house that I was just talking about. He had lived in the closet in the living room of that house.
Oh, okay.
So that was we rented a two-bedroom house, and we're 19, we rented a two-bedroom house. It just grew from three of us to turning into, like, anyone in town would, like, come hang out and like, oh, can I just stay here for a night?
Yeah.
And 4 months later, they're still staying there. And it turned into 13 people living there in this two-bedroom. Cool. Where we had about 7 people in the living room. Cairo lived in the closet of the living room. So yeah, we had been roommates before.
And then you guys moved to Van Ness, and was Pete involved with it, or he just coincidentally moved into downstairs?
We had all moved in around the same time because that house had actually burnt down before, mostly burnt, and so it was just fixed up, and we knew some other guys from North Carolina that lived on the first floor, so we knew that it was becoming available, and so right. A bunch of us, Strubing lived on the first floor. And,
shout out.
Strubing.
Ewan Bowman, what's up, guys?
Shout out.
Seth Cheeks in the closet.
Seth Cheeks, yeah.
Shout out.
Pretty epic times.
How'd you get on Element?
Dan Wolf hooked me up with New Deal. He started getting me boards, because he was team manager of both at that time. And he was getting me a bunch of boards, and then I guess Reese had told him to give me Element boards instead. So,
oh, sick.
Super awesome. Cause,
shout out to Reese Forbes.
Shout
thanks
out.
Thanks a lot, Reese. He helped me out a lot. Helped me out with the getting on Vita as well, and just super awesome person, and amazing to be able to skate around with him.
He's part of my softball team.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we got softball night, and it's me, him, Rob Welsh, Alyssa, Becker. Mm. Our crew's grown. We need 9 for the full team. But
we don't stand a chance. I don't know if you need anyone else. You're good.
But going back, you discovered skateboarding in New Hampshire. Is that mm-hmm. where you got your first real skateboard?
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
Jeff Phillips.
Sick.
Yeah.
The one with the breaking out, the name breaking out of the
I got it
block.
Used from a friend, but
how
that's
rad.
That's ironically ended up in Texas. So
that's dude, that's one of the better first boards, because I ask everybody on the show what their first board is. Yeah. Mine was Mike McGill. Sometimes I have a hard time saying that, but I love when I get, oh, Jeff Phillips, are you sure?
Yeah.
That's too good.
Yeah.
That rules.
That was secondhand, but it was, yeah.
So Cairo said that you used to skate with shin guards. What was up with that?
I just banged my shins a lot, trying flip tricks. Uh-huh. I guess I wasn't consistent enough, but I was just always banging my shins. They were always bloody, and I guess at some point I got some kind of staph infection in my shins.
Right.
Where it just turned into just hundreds of pus bubbles all over my shins, and it just was looked pretty nasty. And I went to a few different doctors. None of them really knew what it was going on, but I had basically just got one where they were just saying that if this infection gets into my bones, they'll have to cut my legs off.
No way.
I got shin guards. They were trying to tell me I could never skate again because it's too risky.
Damn.
If the infection could keep going, I just was like, I'll just get some shin guards. Basically, my shins are now paper, like the skin just was really thin from the infections that I can literally flick it with my finger and it'll rip open.
Like even today?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then now it's even worse. I'll show you my other shin because I got hit on my motorcycle.
If,
so
if you've ever seen a swell bow, it's like a swell bow but on the shin.
It's a skin graft.
Damn.
So I got T-boned on my motorcycle about 5 years ago. Had to have a few operations and took shin from my.
Does that make it tough to like run and stuff? Like do you?
I mean, it took a while at first. I couldn't even move my foot for a while. I didn't do physical therapy for a while and get my foot working. But as far as where the skin graft part of it, it's numb.
Okay.
So if I bang it, I don't know what happened. I definitely have to keep wearing shin guards.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the valet service. You ran a valet service in San Francisco.
Yeah.
How did that go about? Like, how did you get so business savvy? Like, how did you figure out how to run that and get it going and everything?
I randomly started working for one company, and then it just started growing a lot. Whereas this one company had about 2 restaurant accounts, and then it grew, and I kept getting just connecting with other skateboarders that were. Even Slap had an article about skateboarding and valets back then where it just really grew to so many skateboarders were valet. It was just a perfect job if you're trying to skate all day.
Yeah.
And you go work for 5 hours at night, make a lot of money, and then you can still even go out at night. And you have like it was such a good job, and then everyone wanted to work shifts. You see, if you wanted to go on a trip for a couple of months, it didn't even matter because someone would just cover your shifts.
And it was skaters that kind of understood, like, oh, you're going on a trip, I'll cover it for you.
Yeah, and it kind of took someone with this skateboard mentality, I guess, or skateboarders to do the job in San Francisco because there's no parking there. And
right.
There was no, and everything was not legit. Like, there was no, you're working at these restaurants downtown San Francisco, and they do not have a parking lot. Which no one know that none of the customers know that, or no one knows that. But there's no parking lot anywhere for them to use. There's nothing available. So you're parking at rush hour in downtown or wherever the restaurant is. You're making spots somehow. So you're having to like drive a few blocks, go to an alleyway and park at a fire hydrant. You know which fire hydrant you can park at. You know how to where to park. And you're right. Just playing, but and trying to make it. The customer doesn't know.
Oh.
Because it's totally illegal. All these accounts are run like that because there is no parking lots.
You think that's how they're running it today?
I don't know anymore. There's some of them probably, yeah.
It's a common job for skaters to this day. Like, it's the job.
You're making $20 to $30 an hour in cash and you make it work. You're like, yeah. I got it. I'll go do it. And it was like kind of a fun challenge in a way. It was stressful, but it was like, you're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'll go park it somewhere. Yeah, you're like backing up two blocks on a one-way street just because, you know, you see a spot opening up and you're just flying up backwards in someone's brand new car. Yeah, it was a trip. You have people with their brand new car, like, I wouldn't let my brother drive this, and they just give you the car and you're just like flying backwards up.
Is there a standard for that kind of stuff? Like, me and my girlfriend were just checking out of the hotel and I'm like, is there a percentage? We read that there's 10% for every $10,000 the car's worth is how people tip. Like, is there some?
Really? I've never heard that.
If it's a $30,000 car, you tip $3.
If you go off that way, it would probably be backwards. So someone with a used Honda Accord or Civic or whatever, any older car is going to tip better than someone with a better car, generally.
Because the rich hold on to their money?
Right. They respect what you're doing. The rich, they don't care. They just expect people to do stuff for them. Unless they want to pay extra and you don't drive their car and you leave it up front. It definitely doesn't correlate with the value of the car. It negatively does, actually.
Yeah, I always trip on it. Like, do you tip both ways? Like, if you're going into the hotel and coming out, do you tip both ways?
I guess it just depends on what you're doing, how much it is.
If you come and go 10 times in one day, you're losing a lot of money.
Right, no, I know. We did restaurants, and then I know it's probably different with the hotels.
Sure.
Basically, this company got really big and started treating us. We were taking care of everything, and they started like not really treating us as well. So we were just like, what if we just start our own company?
Mm-hmm.
And we brought it up with the restaurant, and they're like, go ahead. And
that's sick.
Me and Johnny Roughneck started that.
What was the restaurant?
It was Restaurant Lulu and Aziz and Ula.
Oh, sick.
So it was, yeah. Well, it just started with Restaurant Lulu and Aziz, and then Ula opened up down the street, and we took that over. We did that as well, but it was basically, a hostile takeover, which, yeah, it was kind of a crazy move there, but we just kind of did it. We've tried to figure it out. Like, how do you start a business?
Right. And it worked out.
But it was also the same thing. Right after we took it over, there was a parking lot across the street. It got bought out, turns into apartments, and we were parking all the cars in the back alley all around the street. There's a lot to deal with. Any time of day or night, I get a call, crackhead broke into a car again.
Fuck.
That sucked to have that hanging over my head always, and I didn't want to own it more than 5 years because I felt like that's what I would end up doing forever. If I did it more than 5 years, I'd start growing it too much.
You're trapped.
Yeah. So that's 5 years to the month I left.
Did you like give it over or did you just get out of it?
I sold him my part without the getting the money part.
Does he still do
it? He doesn't do it. He ended up selling it to someone else a few years later.
Okay. We're going to take a break, actually, and hear from a few of our friends, and we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Dylan.
And Stevie.
From No Comply Skate Shop in downtown Austin, Texas.
If you're in town, make sure to come beat the heat and come up and see us. We have all your favorite brands and everything you need.
Also, Shortbus might be here, and everyone loves him.
Bye.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden, and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
This is Austin Emilio, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
Let's go to that magical day that you're at Third and Army, ollieing over a pipe.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, booyah, Thrasher cover.
Yeah, that was crazy because I thought Luke Ogden was just trying out his new camera and just testing. He just kept asking me to keep awing over that. And
was that the Hasselblad? Like his first time using this?
So I thought he was just practicing. I was, you know, well, he didn't tell me he was going to use, like, I didn't think he'd use it for anything. I just thought he was practicing with his new camera. So he kept telling me to do ollies. I was like, all right, cool. And I still have the Polaroid at my house.
No way.
Yeah. Sick. It was funny. Like, we were just leaving. I was just joking. Like, yeah, cover shot. You got, just expected it. Not, didn't think it was really for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess all my housemates found out about, like, Cairo knew about it. No one told me.
Uh-huh. And then, so it was a surprise.
Well, Ryan Kingman, who was the team manager at that time of Element, he texted me. He's like, congratulations. I was like, huh? I didn't know what he was talking about. So I talked to him. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What's going on? He's like, wait, you don't know? I was like, wait, am I actually on the team now? Or what's going on? Like, what? Congratulations, what?
From flow to pro.
Yeah, that was a pretty awesome surprise. I had no idea.
Do you remember the year?
It was a May 2001 issue.
May 2001. Yeah, classic covers. When did you go to Austin for the first time, and who were you with?
My twin brother Simon had ended up out here. Uh-huh. He had been here for a while. He ended up here with a girlfriend, and then I came back because he got into a movie called Level Land that was filmed here, and they were going to premiere it at South by Southwest 2000. I don't know if that was 3 or 2 or around that time.
Okay.
So I drove out with him and a few folks. We came out to see the premiere of that, probably around that time, around 2003 or so.
And then what made you leave San Francisco to open the shop out here?
Well, one thing was the valet thing where I was really wanted to find, I didn't want to get stuck doing that. My 5-year mark was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was one factor. And then my twin brother Simon was still living here. And then he, that summer, found out he was about to have twin daughters. And I was trying to look for something to do, somewhere to get into, and he was saying we should do a shop here in Austin because really wasn't one that, there was one here that people really just really weren't into, and they wouldn't go there, just it wasn't supporting anything. And so I was like, yeah, that's a pretty awesome reason to just try something new, dive into it. And
sure.
So really, without too much, you know, not much time at all, I just kind of dove in. It's like, yeah, let's do it.
Uh-huh.
Sublet my room, left SF, came.
Just dove right into it. What were the hardest parts in the early stages?
There's a lot of, yeah, it was hard. I didn't know, that was my first retail job ever, so I had no idea. Didn't even think about a lot of it beforehand. So uh-huh. It was just like, oh yeah, wait, what do you do? How many shoes do stores have? I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was, yeah, it was very tricky. I'd just sink or swim, just kind of try and figure things out. Learned a lot of stuff the hard way. I had to bartend, you know, put all my money into it. All my saved up money I put into it. So, and I couldn't, any money that we'd make at the shop had to go back into it because it was the only way you can, to keep it alive and to grow it was to get more. And
so you were working two jobs, right? You were bartending too on the side?
Yeah, I would bartend all night and work the shop all day.
Yeah, fuck. And then you were saying, because originally you got the shop in the South, and then you said you started coming over here on the daily looking for, because you knew this was a good area, so you would ask people if they're going out of business.
Yeah, I didn't like our first location, which was in a little plaza in the south of Austin. When I knew there was plans for a big skate park, and then I knew once the money was actually allocated for the park, and it's right near downtown.
Mm.
It meant, coming from San Francisco also, it just meant a lot to be able to skate to and from the shop. I felt like you want to have a skate shop that it's not just driving to and then you drive away. So I wanted somewhere that was close to downtown so you could just go skate downtown or from downtown and get to the shop. Even without the park here, it was cool to be closer to downtown. And then it was also next to Austin Community College. So it's cool to have a lively flow of students and just having a flow of people walking by who just gives it a little more energy.
No, but it's a cool spot. The coffee shop moved in.
Yeah, so that took a while. Once we got this location and then the park took another 3 years or so to open.
Right.
But it really, we got really lucky, and you never know what park you're going to get and, you know, how it's actually going to come out. And this one came out great. Yeah, it's one of the better parks out there.
Yeah. Austin was on the show last week, and he was saying that he's been going to a bunch of skate parks on his travels. And he's like, dude, the Austin one's still just the best.
Yeah. It flows really well, and it's spread out. It's just so many little things to mess around on. It doesn't get old.
You guys have done a few, if not more, collabs with rad people. Is there one that sticks out to you?
Well, probably our biggest accomplishment on a collab would be our van shoe that came out this year, and that was with Daniel Johnson. And that was pretty epic.
I just bought this shirt, by the way.
Nice. The shoes sold out right away. They still have some of the shirts. Yeah, it was like a really cool thing, and it was cool to collaborate with the whole High RU project. It's Daniel Johnson. It's a nonprofit that brings attention and to mental health awareness, and proceeds, a percentage of sales went to the foundation.
Rad. Yeah, that's a good cause.
Yeah, definitely.
What's some of the other stuff that's like really positive in the skateboard community right now? I know you were mentioning that there's like a real influx of girl skaters.
Yeah, we've seen a huge growth around here, and I guess everywhere, with girls and women getting into skateboarding. The difference, I think, was especially when it's a younger girl, or anywhere from like 5 or 6 to mid-teens, and there's their dad's coming in. Their dad is now my age, so there's a whole different understanding of what skateboarding is than, say, 5 or 10 years ago, when the dad would come in and their daughter wants a skateboard, and the dad would just be very weirded out and like, I don't know, it's weird, she wants a skateboard, like acting like she's asking for, I don't know. Now there's nothing weird about it. It's just like, yeah, she wants a skateboard. So yeah, there's a whole different dynamic, and even the shoe companies and everything are realizing that we don't need to make just shoes that are cute and canvas or whatever for the girls. They're actually skating and they're ripping, and they need something. And same with kids, we don't need to sell it to the mom, the shoes to the mom, except the kids are ripping, and and that's finally taking notice.
We got to give props to Alyssa Steamer.
Yeah,
we just have to.
Yeah,
she's gonna come on my podcast someday. She's a good friend. But yeah, she fucking paved that way. Lizzie and Nora are two of the current girls, I think, that have boards up and stuff from legitimate companies.
Yeah,
is there other girls that girls are looking up to?
There's actually quite a few. It's hard to name everyone without leaving people out. Yeah. From the Element days, I remember Vanessa Torres. She had first got on, and that was really cool. We picked her up, Vanessa, and went to skate camp. I don't know her well, but I would see her randomly through the years and just kind of see her come out of her shell, because I know that must have been a hard one for her when first getting on and just diving into that world of being, you know, there wasn't many like her doing it.
Yeah,
it
was more and of a, she's the, got the guys that club. Rad style. Like,
yeah, and then she did it. So she cool. hand came in and she, yeah, made her mark, and that was cool to see. Even back in SF, just seeing there would be the premieres with the girls in the videos, and they would rage harder than any of the dudes. Once they became comfortable with it, they really stepped up. It was cool to see.
Oh, yeah. Amy Curran. Yeah. Jesse Van Rockout. Like Elias said, too many names, and we don't want to leave any out, but these are just ones that are on the top of my mind. We can't talk to you without talking about Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
What's the deal there? Hiram Bingham. Who was he?
That's my great-grandfather. He was a professor of Latin American studies at Yale, and he was led a lot of expeditions down into Peru, which ended up to him discovering Machu Picchu. It's something that, for me, was always a cool thing to know about growing up.
You've been there, obviously.
Actually, I've been a couple times, yeah. It's cool to see that, you know, a lot of the stuff's named after him down there. The windy road going up the mountain, there's Hiram Bingham Highway, there's the Hiram Bingham Express, which is actually a extra luxury train that I can't even go on. They use his name, you'll just see it everywhere, but it's
why can't you go on it?
Well, I mean, I'm allowed to, but I can't afford it.
Oh, it's 5-star.
It's one of those like crazy luxury.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any tips you have for people going there? Is there a way to acclimate? Is the elevation a critical thing?
Like, yeah, well, yeah.
Should you go there early and acclimate before you hike, or like, what's your tip?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, well, you're going to end up in Cusco on the way there, and I don't know if that was 6,000 or 9,000 feet, but it's you'll feel it you definitely want to get used to it, and also you want to, that little city is epic. It's you want to, but it takes time. You want to acclimate and get.
So kick it in Cusco. Yeah. You're about Lake Tahoe elevation, so you get there for a day or two, and all of a sudden
you get there for sure.
Yeah, I always get, like, when I go to Colorado, I always have nausea and a hard time sleeping the first night.
You'll feel it, but I highly recommend planning it more in advance and doing the 4-day hike there. You can hike the Inca Trail. It's a 4-day hike, and they limit the amount of people that do it because it's for wear and tear. I forgot how many, maybe 500 people a year can do it or something. Because it's the actual Inca Trail and it's not like a new trail they built. They just had cleared it out and cleared it so you could get on it. But it's an amazing, you have to do it with a guide, and which is awesome because there's the guide service. They run ahead of you. They just run off. They run up the mountain carrying you. It's crazy. You catch up to them and they have food made for you. Like every meal is made. And it's the most amazing food.
That's sick.
It's still it's a hard hike because it's very vertical, the mountains. It's just straight up and straight down. So you're not very linear, like you're not going very far, but it's just straight up and down the mountains. And you get to see a lot.
I'm pretty sure Fatback did complete the hike, so I have a little confidence. I think I got it.
You got this. You can do it. Especially, if these guys are running off and they're carrying the tents and setting everything up, all you got to do is hike.
Okay, right.
So but still, it's not easy. You're going straight up to 14,000 feet, so you get to where, like, every three steps you're taking a break when you get up that high because it's you're going up really quick.
Sure. Traveling is kind of in your DNA, I think. You've traveled a bunch. Do you have, like, a top three spot that you've really enjoyed?
Lately, I've been going out to Mallorca a lot. I've got a friend that lives out there, and that's been pretty epic. Uh-huh. I really like getting out to Paris. Yeah. It's like the whole feel of the city and just skating around there, just epic, just invigorating being there and recharging and just rolling around in that kind of ambiance is pretty awesome. Just skating around or riding a bike around. Those have been epic. Peru was amazing. Lima's really cool as well now. Like it used to be really rugged and just really smoggy, and it's cleaned up a lot. That was a really cool city. It's also hard to pick favorites because there's been a lot of epic trips. I got to go to Morocco a year ago, and that was an amazing time. There's amazing places everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I think is important about traveling for people is to, when people think that their area matters more than anywhere else. Like, go somewhere, everywhere matters just
check
as much.
It out.
And
exactly.
Everywhere is just has amazing things going on.
So when you're going on like a long distance trip, because this is kind of something that is a weakness for me, do you have any strategies? Like, do you need to get an aisle seat or a window seat or anything? Like, as travel at a certain time of the day, or like,
I go for the window seat so I can sleep on it
against it.
That's my
And then do you try to stay up the night before so you're tired? And
no, I think the most
on the time zone that you're going to.
It's hard to really dive into that before you're actually doing it. I wouldn't give up sleep any time though. Like, you want to, I think, even if you're going to be trying to sleep on your plane, you want going to different time zones. It's, you want to sleep
as much as you can. Yeah. Okay.
But I think
it's hard. One time,
drink a lot of water. You get dehydrated.
After 6 hours, I'm fucked. I feel restless. I can't read anymore. I can't watch TV anymore. I can't sleep anymore. I can't sit still. Like, I'm just fucked. So I don't know. I got to get better at the over six, because I want to go to Australia someday.
That's a long one.
Yeah,
I've never made it there. But
Cheryl wants me to go to South Africa. I'm like, that's about as far as you can go.
Yeah, and that's epic. But you go through. Yeah, it's crazy when you go through so many meals and you're still on the plane.
We got to wrap it up because I got to check out of my hotel, get to the airport. But I got to ask you at least one more question.
Yeah.
Apparently, you had a really good experience hanging out with Tom Penny.
Yeah. Well, that was on one of my Euro trips.
Uh-huh.
Bumped into him and Theo. I knew Theo Hand from SF.
Oh,
sure. Shot photos before.
Shout out to Theo.
What up, Theo? That was awesome. I used to just go to Europe.
Shout
get
out.
A ticket for just stay out there for 3 months or usually just get air hitch back then was a thing where you just buy vouchers and you could get on standby to flight. So you didn't have to commit to coming back. You just had to commit to like a period of time.
Okay.
So you just buy a ticket there, and then wherever you're at, you try and get on a standby flight at some point. So I just go out there with not solid plans and stay out there for a few months.
But sick.
Bumped into Theo, and he was with Tom, and I got to meet him. And then they were going back to Bordeaux, where Tom was living, and they're like, "Yeah, you come kick it with us." So I didn't really have plans. So I just went back to them to Bordeaux, and
sick.
That was a pretty epic time.
I bet Tom's amazing.
Yeah, that was a
full legend.
That was cool to kick it with him. It was quite an experience.
Nice.
And he was obviously someone that I really looked up to, and it was epic to be around.
Yeah. I've met him a couple of times when we go to those Copenhagen things, and it was easy for me to get that open door because I'm with Jake, so I got to kind of be a fly on the wall for some rad conversations. Anything else we should know? What's the address of No Compliance? 812?
812 West 12th Street.
In Austin, Texas.
78701.
What else should people know?
About No Comply?
Just in general.
People should know a lot of things in general, I guess.
Yeah.
I wish I knew what it was, though.
I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. That come by, say hi.
Come by the shop. They're very friendly. They got good coffee next door, and they got lots of boards on the walls. Yeah. They support all the right people. Roger Skateboards is up on the wall. That's Seabin's company, and they got fucking Welcome. They got all the deluxe companies. They got, you know, the Nike color wave coming out. We were just, Cheryl and I just went shopping, and I think she probably spent like $300 in there.
All right,
like,
thank you.
Let's get this, let's get that. I was like, oh, I'm not going to stop you. Yeah. But it was really cool hanging out. Good seeing you. Yeah. Austin, like I said, is one of my favorite towns. I feel like it's much like Portland, where I just feel like everyone's so hospitable, and I just feel comfortable here, and like people are friendly, and it goes a long way. It was good reconnecting with you. What should we listen to on the way out of here?
Oh,
got a song we can...
Yeah, let's listen to some Daniel Johnson.
Big love to all you out there. If you are in Austin and you don't stop by No Comply, you're blowing it. Barton Springs, put that on our list. And definitely go get some barbecue at Salt Lake. I got to run to the airport, but we'll be back next Tuesday. Big love from Talkin' Schmidt and Elias Bingham, and we out.
Yeah.
Don't wanna be free of hope, and I'm at the end of my rope. It's so tough just to be alive when I feel like the living dead. I'm giving it up so plain, I'm living my life in vain. And where am I going to? I gotta really try so hard to get by. Where am I going to? I don't know where is up or down, and there ain't any love left around. Everybody wearing a frown, waiting for Santa to come to town. You're giving it up so plain, you're living your life in vain. And where am I going to? You gotta really try so hard to get by. We're giving it up so plain, we're living our lives in vain. And where are we going to? Gotta really try so hard to get by. And where are we going to?
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talkin' Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow up them charts. All the episodes will always remain free to my listeners, but if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so at our website, TalkinSchmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like stickers, beanies, hats, possibly even a t-shirt. The website has an entire archive of the episodes with extra photos and sometimes even video. If you have personal pics of our Talkin' Schmidt guests, please send them to me at epicallytrife@yahoo.com, and maybe your photo will end up on the site, or better yet, on Talkin' Schmidt's Instagram account. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by me, Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature, and a special shout-out goes to my executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout-out.
Love it!
Until next week, this is Talkin' Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt.